Ladies and gentlemen, we would like to welcome you and thank you for coming to our Tech Talk training session of August 20, 2007, an overview of podcasting. We'd like you to sit back and listen and jot down a few questions that you might have to yourselves, and then when the time comes, we'll open things up for questions here. But for a while, we're going to just let our speakers give their presentation. To get the microphone first, we want to present our two presenters. First are Kelly Sapergia of Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, Canada, and Gene Asner of USA. I think Gene's from Chicago. And I think we all know them. We know what a great job they both do, and we sure appreciate the fact that they're here. So without further ado, I want to turn the microphone over to Kelly, who will give us an overview of podcasting. So, Kelly, the microphone is yours.
Okay. Thanks, Bob, and everyone. And thanks for that great introduction there. Can you hear me okay?
Just fine. Thank you.
I just wanted to make sure that things were working because I've got my sound effects turned off. Anyway, this evening, I and Gene Asner are going to try to help you discover what fun you can have when it comes to creating podcasts. Now, the first question that you're probably wondering is, what exactly is a podcast? Well, for those of you who are not familiar with the term, a podcast is basically, well, you can think of it almost as a downloadable radio show. Although if you're dealing with a video podcast, it's usually like a downloadable TV show. And there are a variety of those on the net as well, although we won't get into that here. There are a variety of podcasts. In fact, there are, I don't know about hundreds, but there's quite a lot out there on just about every topic you can imagine, from various computer-related stuff to, let's say, NPR or CBC or public radio items or articles. I get some from ABC News, their movie reviews, a New Age music podcast, and a bunch of other things. And I even have created my own podcast, which you can find on the net at www.casesapergia.net. There's a link to that. And it is a lot of fun, but the thing is about a lot of these podcasts is that there are some that can be a little amateurish in terms of production values, and I usually stay away from those. I'm referring to ones where you may have somebody talk about something, and then they may drop something and then try to find it or something, and then they would come back to the microphone or something. Those are the sorts of things I tend to stay away from, or it depends on the sound quality too, but that's just me. Now, as far as creating a podcast is concerned, there are a few things you will need to discuss. Now, this was a big problem for me, I will admit, because I generally do a lot of stuff on games and things, but at the time when I started, I didn't have a clue as to what I wanted to do. But people kept asking me, are you planning on doing a podcast at some point? And I would usually say something like, well, I'm thinking about it or whatever, but finally I decided to try it. So for my first few shows, I started out with a bit of a variety. On my first program, I did kind of an autobiography of myself, and on the second program, I did an entire show with music from independent artists, which we will get into later. And the third program dealt with some computer programs and games, and that seemed to stick for the most part, although I would classify my podcast as having a bit of a variety to it. Now, the next thing that you will have to do is to decide how you want to use your podcast as far as how people are going to access it. Now, a podcast uses something called an RSS feed. That's a really simple syndication feed. And you'll see this on a lot of news sites and magazines and stuff. I think the New York Times has some. I know NPR has lots all over their site, and so do a lot of public radio stations. They use RSS feeds, and that is what's used to power a podcast. And there are a couple ways that you can use this. If you have a blog, let's say on a site like WordPress, or if you have, let's say, a website and you have the WordPress software installed, you can basically use that as a podcast. Because what will happen is your podcast client that you will download will look for any files with MP3 extensions, or I think maybe there's some other audio file types that it may recognize as well, but if it sees MP3s, definitely it will grab those. The other way that you can do this is by either creating your own RSS feed, which is what's known as an XML file, for extended markup language. Now, I won't get into that because that's kind of beyond the scope of this presentation, but it can be done. I've done it myself a few times. The only thing I don't like about that approach, in a way, is that you would have to update the file whenever you get any new content put up on your site. However, if you decide you want to go that route, there is another excellent way of doing it. Anodic Concepts at www.anoetic.com, which also has services like UltraHost and Ultra Radio and others, they have created what's known as the Simple Podcaster script. And this is one that you have to pay for. It's about $15. And what you would do is you do a little bit of editing just to give it your title and whatnot, your title, author, and a few things. And then you put it up in, let's say, an empty folder on your website. And then if you put an MP3 file in that folder wherever this script is, it will, I don't know how it does it, but it will automatically add it to your podcast. So in other words, you don't have to do any more editing after that. You just simply put it up on your site, start putting up your files or even removing them or whatever you want to do, and it will do the rest. I don't know how it does it, but it works beautifully, and I highly recommend it. Now, the other thing that you will want to do, and this assumes that you're going to be doing a radio style podcast like I do, and we'll show you this in a little bit, is to, of course, get your elements right. You may want to have a big voice or something introduce your podcast. You're listening to Kelly Sapurge's podcast or something like that, and there's a number of people that can do that for you. I can do that as part of my KJS Productions business. I've done some work for one podcast called the Code Amber podcast, and I'm always willing to help out with those for a fee, of course. And there's also the issue of music, and we will talk about music in a little bit when we get into the demonstration for my part of the presentation. And the other thing that you will need to do is be very familiar with your recording software. Sometimes I find with amateurish-styled podcasts, and I don't know about if I'd say this was a bad thing, but it's something I'm not really that crazy on, is that sometimes, going back to my example about people, dropping things on the floor, well, I don't really want to hear that in a podcast. All I care about is whatever information you want to discuss. It might be, let's say, on a computer program or a music, keyboard style, keyboard thing, whatever. That's all I care about. I don't care about any, if you're, dropping things or maybe, laughing on, on the phone to some joke or something. And this has happened. I've heard of some podcasts where someone will be doing, you know, giving an interview on the phone, and then something, you know, might go wrong. Either a participants might, you know, drop off for whatever reason, and then there might be a comment, and then everything just goes crazy, you know, for a few minutes. I don't know if I necessarily care for that. So that's when editing comes in very handy, and as well, it also helps out with your presentation as well. So that is basically how you go about creating a podcast. At least that's what I think, anyway, as far as, you know, that's how I tend to do it. What I do is I have a couple of things. I use the GCast system for my personal podcast, and that's on a link. There's a link to that on my personal website, and that allows me to upload any MP3s, and once it's done that, it will set it up so that if you're on a dial-up connection, you can listen to it that way through their embedded player. But you can also, of course, add it to your podcatcher client. So that's what I tend to do, and I tend to do my podcast as a radio production. So I thought what I would do is I thought I'd just go in and just show you how I would put one of these together. I won't upload it or anything, but this is just to give you an idea of what all you can do when you're creating a podcast. And for this demonstration, I am using SoundForge version 6.0D, and I will have JAWS speaking in the background here as we're doing this. Okay, we got that on. Now, I'm currently in SoundForge, and the first thing I'm going to do is load up a script, because I want to create the intro portion of the podcast. So I'll just do this real quick here. Now, this is not gonna, I'm not gonna really, you know, do this in a style of a tutorial on SoundForge or anything. But as I say, this is just to show you what all you can do as far as podcasts are concerned. So what I'll do is I'll load this one file here.
01 intro.
You're listening to a special edition of Kelly Sapirja's podcast. Today, a look at some classic games and how you can play them on your computer. Before we get started demonstrating the... Okay, well, that's the file I want, so I'm just going to press enter to load that up. And I want to add some music behind that. But first of all, I have to do a little bit of editing, because there's a bit of blank space at the start of this. So we will take that out. Now I'm going to load up the intro track, my music track that I use for my podcast intro. This is by an artist by the name of Maxim G from the Netherlands, and it's called Into the Night. And this one I found on a site called GarageBand.com. With podcasts, I think it's always a good idea, if possible, to use free music, or at least either royalty-free or, as they're called, Creative Commons licensed music. Music that's designed for podcasts, at any rate. And there are a lot of sites out there, like GarageBand.com, Magnatune.com is another one that we will find or talk about in a bit, and a number of others. So anyway, I'll load this one. Okay, and there's that. So I'm just going to let this load in here. It's about a 3-minute long track, so we obviously won't be using the whole thing, but what I'm going to do is just press the space bar, and then I'll press enter at the spot where I want to mix in my file. There we go, and now I'll go back in, and you're listening to that, and you're listening to a special edition of Kelly's... I'm trying to remember here if I've got to... boost the volume here. You're listening to us. No, I guess I don't have to. Okay, that's fine. So I just copied it to the clipboard. We'll go in now and mix it in. Okay. And I'm going to add a bit of a fade here. Actually, wait a minute. I'm doing something wrong here. You're listening... Okay, podcast. Today, a look at some classic games and how you can play them on your computer. There we go, that's what I want. I don't want the rest of that yet.
Man, two, leaving.
Okay, so this is the first part of the script. So I'm just gonna. You're listening to a special. You're listening. Yeah, that'll be fine. So now what we're gonna have is this. You're listening to a special edition of Kelly Superge's podcast. Today, a look at some classic games and how you can play them on your computer. Now, I like to let this play a little bit. And right there is where I'll put in the rest of the file, which basically has me saying... Before we get started demonstrating these classic games, I just want to thank everyone for all your comments about episode 5 of the podcast. And there's a few other little things here. Let's just put some comments I like to put in before every so often. Before there we go. And so what I'll do is I'll edit. I'll just copy this and we'll mix it in. And I'm going to add a fade out on the music here. There we go. That should be good enough. Fade out. Blank. And I've just got rid of the rest of the track because we won't need it. Kelly Superge's podcast. Today, a look at some classic games and how you can play them on your computer. And now I'm just going to move to the spot where I want the rest of the script put in. There we go, I'm just making sure I'm in the right spot. Okay,
mix.
And now we can mix in the rest of the script.
Process.
There we go, and now we should have... Before we get started demonstrating these classic games, I just want to thank everyone for all your comments about episode 5 of the podcast, and I'm glad that you enjoyed my review of Sarah and the Castle of Witchcraft and Wizardry, and I hope to do some more reviews like that for you in the near future. So that's what I put in. Now, at this point during my podcast, I might want to maybe put in a feedback line comment. This is a phone number that I have set up that people can use to call to leave any comments or suggestions or whatever about the podcast. So I'm going to load up two more files here. I'm going to load up one which is an ID I've made for this.
Feedback line.
And now, a comment from the feedback line. So that's the comment there, or I mean the ID. So I'm going to mix that in real quick.
Leaving me.
Before we get... Okay, let's move to the bottom here. And for you in the near future. There we go, and we'll put it right there. That for you in the near future. And now, a comment from the feedback line. There we go, and I'll stop at that point. And now I'm going to mix in a little sample of a feedback comment here. If I can find it. What am I looking for?
Max and G, listener comment.
Hello. Ah, there we go, listener comment, okay. And this actually, I will admit, it is me. I did phone into the number and leave a little comment just so you can hear what it sounds like, but that's okay, this is just a little example. And so we'll mix that in. And the feedback. So now we'll have... And now, a comment from the feedback line.
Hello, this is a sample of what it sounds like when a listener sends me a comment for the podcast. I hope you enjoy it.
Yes, and I know the quality isn't the greatest, but that's okay. Considering it's over the phone, that's actually not too bad.
Now
I think about it, let me just get rid of some of these other files here.
Leaving.
Real quick. Because we won't need those. And at this point now, I can either put in one of two other things. This is the way I would tend to do it on my podcast. I could either put in just some more talking, or in the case of what we're going to do now, I'm going to mix in a script that has both myself giving the contact information in case anyone wants to leave a comment, and a piece of music from the Magnatune label. Okay, so that's our comment, or file over here. Now, Magnatune is a neat site. If you're looking for podcast-friendly music, By that I mean music that you kind of, well, of course, use during your podcast. What their slogan is, "We are not evil," and the way it works is you can purchase their music for a variety of purposes. It is Creative Commons licensed. And they do have, there are different ways of using their music with, you know, a podcast. I believe they used to have a service where you could get a credit card number that they would give you, and then you would put that in, and then you wouldn't be charged for using the music. But I don't know if they're doing that. You may have to contact them about that. But I've used that, and I've gotten a lot of good music from them. So I'm going to mix in this little sample here that I've got, and I'll then play this for you in its entirety just so you can hear what I'm going to do. It's actually just a portion of a song. I didn't put the whole thing in. So here's what we'll have now after the listener comment.
I hope you enjoy it.
I certainly do enjoy getting your comments, and if you'd like to comment on anything you've heard on the podcast, you can call my comment line at area code 206-339-2557. That's 206-339-2KJS. Now here's some music from the Magnatune label. This is The West Exit with Artificial. Pretty good Rhodes piano there, I must admit. Okay, now it's fading out. Let's put that in there. Like that. So I'm going to now put in one other thing here that we have. From the 2000... Yeah, that's the file I want. And we will do that. So now... From the 2007 Magnatune Sampler CD, that was The West Exit with Artificial. And if you'd like more information about Magnatune and their music, you can go to www.magnatune.com. That's MAGNATUNE.com. And then at that point, I might maybe, you know, do something else. I might maybe, let's say, demonstrate a product or do a game review or something like that. And... as far as you know, other music is concerned, I do use, you know, of course, Magnatune, but I will admit I've also used material in some from some dance mixes that I've been able to obtain. They're sort of promo releases, and generally I look for music that's you know, instrumental for production work, and that's what I did in the case of. The next idea, I probably won't mix this one in because I think you get the idea of how this works. But I just want you to hear what I've done with this. So I'll just press the G key here for game review.
Game review.
And now on Kelly Sapergian's podcast, it's time for a game review. So this is a little bit of dance music here that... I basically talk over and I discuss what, you know, game we're going to be featuring and all that. And then it would fade out and go into whatever demonstration I have. So we'll just stop that. And then basically that's how the process works. You just keep going. I just keep going and mixing stuff in, you know, and of course producing material. And then... I may, and then after, when I'm done the podcast, I will put in what's known as a credits file. Now, I don't have one here to really demonstrate how it works, but it basically involves me just putting in a piece of music, and then I'll be talking over the top about, you know, how you can contact me and give any legal information and stuff like that. And that is basically how I produce my podcast. And then once I've done that, I just upload it to... to Gcast, and then I will, you know, and then it'll be put into the Podcatcher client, basically, or it will go out and scan for it when I tell it to, and then you would, let's say, get it, and then you'd be able to listen to it on your computer or your MP3 player or whatever. And there's, as I say, different ways of doing podcasts. And you don't have to produce one, you know, like the way I'm doing it. There's, you know, you can, you know, do it your own way. But I sort of tend to, I guess, do it mine from, you know, in terms of a radio program, because that's what I grew up with, radio programming and whatnot. So I guess without further ado, I will turn the mic over to Bob, and if you have any, I don't know if you want to do any questions now there, Bob, or if we should let Gene take over or what, but anyway, I hope you enjoyed this part of the demonstration, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, I'm just waiting to see if Bob says anything. If he doesn't, I'll begin my presentation in a short time.
I would say go ahead, Gene.
Well, these podcast ideas are quite amazing. You know, that if it wasn't for the iPod and things of that nature, I don't think that podcasting today would be the reality it is.
Gene, I'm going to turn the microphone over to you.
Okay, here we are. My presentation is sort of the poor man's podcast. How to produce a nice-sounding podcast, a nice, simple podcast. The program I'm going to be demonstrating has some effects, but not nearly as much or as easily done as you can do with SoundForge. Let me put it this way. I haven't worked with SoundForge, so whether what I'm going to be demonstrating is similar to what you can do in SoundForge, I don't know. After my presentation, it would be interesting to get some comments on that. I won't make any more introductory comments because what I'm going to be doing is very self-explanatory. I will have one or two comments to make at the end, points that I want to clarify or perhaps expand on a bit, but here is my presentation about how to use the Microsoft Sound Recorder, which is a very overlooked and a very useful program for editing audio, as long as your audio isn't really long. In just a moment I'll begin. I want to make a few adjustments and then I'll begin the presentation. Good evening. Here I am again with another presentation. Today, my topic is how to use the Microsoft Sound Recorder to edit material on the fly as though you were working with a tape recorder. The Microsoft Sound Recorder comes with every version of Windows, and you already have it on your machine for free. There may be many other programs that allow you to edit on the fly. I haven't experimented with enough of them to know about that. If people do know of such programs, it would be useful to discuss that after my presentation. I want to emphasize that in presenting material on how to use Microsoft Sound Recorder, I'm not advocating that people use it. If you know of another program that lets you edit on the fly and you want to use it, that's fine. I'm demonstrating this program because it's already on your machine. It mimics the way a tape recorder works, which may make it easier for beginners to work with it. And because I haven't worked with other programs, if they exist, that allow you to edit on the fly. Before I begin a discussion and demonstration of how to work with Sound Recorder itself, I need to give you a bit of background information about the program. Sound Recorder, if you just open Sound Recorder and start recording, it will stop recording after about 1 minute. In general, audio recording programs don't have this limitation. Microsoft evidently intended this program to be used in creating very short audio files, such as something you might want to use as a Windows sound. However, you can make the recorder record for up to 2 hours with very good results for spoken word material if you know the secret of the program. That secret is that you can open a file in Sound Recorder and work with it, and that file can be a reasonably long file. Depending on the format of WAV file you're using, you're limited to working with WAV files in Sound Recorder, you can get more or less material into the file. In other words, the size of the file that you can work with is limited to a certain amount. That size doesn't change. But if you use a format that requires less room in the file to record a certain amount of information, like 5 minutes of information, you can record a lot more in the same size file than if you use a format that uses a lot more room in the file to record the same amount of time. The overall size limit of the file that you can work with in Sound Recorder is about 303 megabytes. If you're recording at a sample rate of 22,050, this will allow you to record 2 hours or maybe just a little bit over 2 hours. If, however, you're making a stereo recording and you're using a sample rate of 44,000, you won't be able to record for more than a half an hour. The file size is the same, but you'll use up the entire file in half an hour. How do you create files to work with in Sound Recorder? You need to use another recording program. Whatever recording program you have other than Sound Recorder, you would use to record a file with the specifications you want, such as the sample rate, of the length that you want, the maximum length. You wouldn't want to keep doing this over and over, so you may want to record a file of 2 hours in length using the 25,000 sample rate that I discussed before, if you want to produce pretty good sounding audio material for a podcast. If you're making a stereo podcast, then make the file for half an hour in length using the 44,000 sample rate. This is important. Whatever parameters you use to record the file are going to be those that are used by Sound Recorder when you open that file. It automatically uses the parameters that the file you open in it are set to. So if you've recorded a file using the 25,050 sample rate and you recorded it as a monaural file, when you open the file in Sound Recorder, Sound Recorder is going to record and work with that file using those parameters. If you've recorded the file as a stereo file with a 44,000 sample rate, when you open the file in Sound Recorder, it will record, whatever you record is going to be recorded as a stereo file at that sample rate. So you don't have to make any adjustments in Sound Recorder to use the correct parameters. You record the file you want to work with in a different recording program using the parameters you're going to want to use when you're working with Sound Recorder. Sound Recorder will automatically use those parameters when you open the file in Sound Recorder. Also, keep in mind that Sound Recorder only works with WAV files, so the file that you create using a different recording program has to be saved as a WAV file. Once you've finished recording and editing material in Sound Recorder and you've saved the file as a WAV file, you then need to convert that file to an MP3 format. The program you used to create the original file will likely be able to make that conversion. The original file that you made using the other recording program, you're going to want to save and use over and over again. You would save it and use it as a template, as though it were a template. In fact, I have such a file, which I call 2-Hour Template. That's the name I gave the file. I never save this file again after I make it. After I create and save this 2-Hour file, I open it in Sound Recorder, record what I want to record, then, if there's extra material at the end, I remove it, and save what I've done with a different name. You never want to save it with the same name as the template, because if you do, you'll overwrite the template file with the new one. So if you've chopped off 45 minutes and you save the file again with the same name, for example 2-Hour Template, it won't any longer be a 2-Hour Template. It will be only an hour and 15 minutes long, and you'll have gone through the trouble of recording the 2-Hour Template, and then you'll have lost that template. So it's very important to remember that when you are working with a template, you use Save As and save the file with a different name. Some of you who know little or nothing about audio recording may find what I've said to be confusing. If you do, then discuss it further with knowledgeable people or get on email lists where such matters are discussed and discuss it there. There are lots of ways of getting information. Now let's start looking at Sound Recorder. First, how do you open Sound Recorder? One way of doing it is to open the Program menu, open the Accessories submenu. In the Accessories submenu, there is another submenu called Entertainment, which you open, and Sound Recorder is located in the Entertainment submenu. You can probably do this in the following way. Open the Programs menu, open Accessories, then type the letter E, which will probably open the Entertainment submenu without you having to press Enter. Just typing E will likely do it. Then type S, which will probably open Sound Recorder without you having to press Enter. So again, what will probably work on your machine is open the Programs menu, open the Accessories menu, type E, then type S. I've opened Sound Recorder. I haven't opened a file in Sound Recorder. I've simply opened the program. Let's see what you see when you first open Sound Recorder. First, you're in a dialog. This program's main window is a dialog. This may seem odd to some of you because you're used to opening programs such as a word processor where you're placed in an edit field, or Outlook Express where you're placed likely in the inbox. But keep in mind that there is no reason that a program can't open and have a dialog as its main window. And that's how this program is set up. It's not too common that you'll see this, but from time to time you may. In some dialogs, when you can't work with an item, it's shown on the screen, but you can't tab to it because it's not available. And that's the case here. There are a number of buttons that a sighted person can see on the screen, but as you tab when you first open Sound Recorder, you see only two items, a left-right slider and a button. This button is the record button. I've labeled the graphics in Sound Recorder. If you don't have labeled graphics, you'll just hear the word button. Or you may hear something like graphic 583 button. Whatever you hear, when you open Sound Recorder and try this yourself, you'll see that there are only two items that you can tab to. One of these items, the button, is the record button. The other items, such as play, are not available because you don't have any information in the program yet. So all you can do is record. I'm going to tab between these options and you can hear what it sounds like.
Record button. Tab left right slider. Tab record button. Tab left right slider. Tab record button.
I stopped at the record button and we are now going to record. You press the space bar on the buttons in this dialog to activate them. When I press the space bar, you'll hear another button announced. I've labeled the graphics in this program, so you'll hear stop button. That's where you are now. The program automatically places you where it expects that it's most likely that you'll want to take the next action. When you're recording, the most likely next action you're going to want to take is to stop recording, so you're automatically placed on the stop button. When you press the space bar to stop recording, you're placed back on the record button, because since you're recording, the program assumes that the most likely action you're going to want to take is to continue recording. Let's hear what this sounds like.
Space, stop button. Space, record button. Space, stop button.
Remember, when you press the space bar on the record button, you will hear stop, because that's where you're placed. That's the next action the program assumes you're going to want to take. When you press the stop button, you'll hear the word record. Don't get confused about this. You're not recording when you hear the word record. You stopped the program from recording, and you hear the word record because that's the option the program assumes you're going to want to use next. I've recorded just a little bit in the demonstration. When I pressed the record button, it recorded for a few seconds, and now I've stopped recording. Let's tab around and see what buttons we have available now.
Tab left right slider 100%. Tab seek the start button. Tab play button. Tab record button. Tab left right slider 100%.
We stopped on the left right slider, which, as you heard, indicates 100% because we were recording and we stopped, and since we didn't load a file into Sound Recorder, the recording is at its end, 100%. As you heard, one of the buttons says seek to start. You don't need to worry about that button because all you have to do to get to the beginning of a file is tab to the left right slider, and press Home. To move to the end of a file, you simply press End while you're on the slider. Let's go over how you use the left right slider, since that's what we're discussing now. When you're playing a file, you can move through the file in the following ways. If you move to the beginning of the file with Home, the file will simply start playing if you've already told the program to play. If you move to the end of the file with End, it will stop. To move by increments in a file, if you use Page Up, if you just press it for a moment and release it, you'll move back perhaps 2 or 3 seconds in the file. If you keep doing it, you'll continue to keep moving back, and you'll hear where you are, because as soon as you release Page Up, the file starts to play from wherever you are in the file. If you want to do what would be simulating a rewind or a fast forward, you would use Page Up, you would press and hold it, and holding it will move you quickly backward through the file. Releasing it causes the file to begin to play from where you are. To move forward through a file by increments, you press Page Down for a moment and then release it, and again you'll move perhaps 2 or 3 seconds when you do that. And you can repeat that as often as you like to move by increments. To simulate fast forwarding through something, you press and hold Page Down and you'll move through the file, and when you release Page Down, the file will begin to play from where you are. Let's review these commands again so they'll be presented in an organized manner. To move to the beginning of a file, Home. To move to the end of a file, End. To move incrementally backward through a file, Page Up, pressed momentarily. To move backward quickly through a file, hold Page Up as long as you want to move. To move forward incrementally through a file, press Page Down for a moment and release it. To move rapidly forward through a file, press and hold Page Down. Release it when you want to stop moving. Further explanation and discussion may not make things more clear at this point. It's probably much better to show you how the recorder works when you're working with it, so I'm going to do that now. I'm going to load a file into Sound Recorder. In fact, I'm going to load a file that I have called 2-Hour Template, the one I told you about before. In Sound Recorder, the command Control-O doesn't work. You need to do Alt-F and then type O, and you're in the open dialog. You then load a file just as you do in any standard Windows program. So I'm going to load the 2-Hour Template file now. I'm not going to record myself doing it, I'm just going to do it. I've loaded the file now, and before continuing to record something, I need to tell you that when you open a large file in Sound Recorder, it may open rather quickly, or it may take a little while. Depending on how fast your computer is and how much memory you have available, the file may load in about 30 seconds, or it may take 3 minutes. But don't worry, if you haven't exceeded the size limitation I told you about, it will open if you're patient. As the file is opening, if it's a long file, you'll hear a button announced. If the graphics have been labeled, you'll hear that it's the record button. That doesn't mean that the file has finished opening. When you open a file in Sound Recorder and it's finished opening, you're placed on the play button. Of course, if you haven't labeled the graphics, you won't hear it as play, but you'll hear a button announced. So if you're opening a long file, you'll hear one button, and then after a pause, you'll hear another button. If you're not sure if the file has finished opening, try tabbing. If the file has not finished opening yet, tabbing will not move you anywhere. You won't move from button to button or to the slider. But when the file has finished opening, tabbing will allow you to move. When you load the file, when the file has finished loading, you're automatically placed on the play button. The program assumes that you want to play the file that you've opened. However, in this case, you want to record. So tab once to the record button, press the space bar and start recording. I'm going to record something now, and I'm going to show you how convenient it is to edit. When you record, any material in the file that you're recording over is erased. In other words, let's say that the left-right slider is set to 0, you're at the beginning of the file, and you start recording. Let's say there's already some material there. Just like a tape recorder, when you record, the material that's already there will be erased and the new material will replace it. So if you record for 5 seconds, you'll erase 5 seconds of material and new material will be in its place. I'm going to demonstrate this by making a short recording, intentionally making a mistake, then recording over the mistake with the correct version of what I want to say. This is a demonstration of Sound Recorder. I am making this recording on August 20th, 2006. Obviously, it isn't 2006, it's 2007. I need to correct that. I'm going to take the following steps. When I made the mistake, I stopped recording by pressing the spacebar. Now, I'm going to tab once to get to the slider. I'm going to move to the beginning of the file by pressing Home. Then I'm going to shift tab twice to get to the play button. The first time I shift tab, I'll be on the record button. The second time, I'll be on the play button and start the file playing. I'll stop the file when I get to the place where I want to record over the mistake I made. I'll then tab once to get to the record button, start recording, and record over it. And it sounds like this when I go through these operations. I'm going to tab to the slider now, press Home. I'm now at the beginning of the file. I'm going to shift tab twice. The first time I'm on record, the second time I'm on play, I'm going to start the file playing. This is a demonstration of Sound Recorder. I am making this recording on August 20th. That's where I want to make the correction, so I stopped it. I pressed the spacebar and stopped it. I'm tabbing once to record. I'm now going to start recording and give the correct year, 2007. After I gave the correct year, I wanted to stop recording, so I pressed the spacebar. Let's listen to what I've recorded and see how the whole thing sounds. I'm going to tab once to get to the slider. I'm going to press Home, which I just did. I'm now at the beginning of the file. I'm going to shift tab 2 times. I am now on the play button. I'm going to press the spacebar. Let's listen to the corrected file. This is a demonstration of Sound Recorder. I am making this recording on August 20th, 2007. Not bad at all. There may be a slightly too long pause, and depending on how much of a perfectionist you are, or I am, I might want to do it over again and leave a slightly less long pause. But as you can hear, the edit was very clean. The pause may have been a little too long, but it wasn't bad. And that's how you edit on the fly using Sound Recorder. I'm now going to answer a question that you're probably wondering about. Why wasn't I using a screen reader, or why didn't you hear a screen reader when I was going through these various operations? Because when you're editing or recording something using your microphone, you don't want to have your screen reader running. The microphone will pick up the sound of your screen reader talking and announcing where you are and what you're doing, and you don't want that. Or if you're not recording using the microphone option in Windows Volume Control, if you're using the option that records every sound that your sound card plays, your screen reader will be directly recorded onto the recording you're making. That will be even louder and more disruptive, so you don't want your screen reader to be running. Therefore, you need to memorize the order of the controls in Sound Recorder. Remember, if you ever get lost and don't know where you are in the dialogue, run your screen reader and look for the left-right slider. If you have a file opened in Sound Recorder, or if you've recorded something short without loading a file, when the program is stopped and you find the left-right slider, remember that shift-tabbing once takes you to record, shift-tabbing twice takes you to play. Even if you don't have the buttons labeled and all you hear is button or graphic 538 or whatever and then button, you'll always know where you are if you use the left-right slider as your point of orientation. When you're practicing, you may want to leave your screen reader on. That may make it easier for you to know what you're doing and follow where you are in the dialogue. But at some point, you're going to have to really learn the order of these controls so that you know where you are and you can record and edit with the screen reader off. If all this sounds difficult, I would say to play and experiment with the program, try recording and editing, and see if it remains difficult. You may find that with practice, what may seem cumbersome and difficult now becomes easy. If it becomes easy, you'll find that you really understand and use the program in the same way as you use a tape recorder. The underlying principles are the same. You can record over things. You move backward and forward as you would when you're rewinding and fast-forwarding a tape. Of course, you're using a computer keyboard and the commands are different than operating the controls of a tape recorder, but the underlying principle and what you're doing is the same. Here's another important point to keep in mind. When you're using sound recorder, if you hold the space bar down, nothing happens. Commands take effect when you release the space bar. So if you're on the record button and you hold the space bar down, nothing will happen. When you release the space bar, the program will immediately start recording. When you release the space bar, if you want to start recording, release it gently so that it makes little or no noise. You don't want the sound of the space bar to be heard on the recording, or you want to make it as soft as you can. When you're ready to record, you may need a moment to compose your thoughts. In that case, probably the easiest thing to do is simply be on the record button, hold the space bar down, compose your thoughts, gently release the space bar, and start talking. If you don't want pauses to be too long when you're editing, and if you don't want to leave unnecessary blank space at the beginning of a file when you're recording, start talking immediately or almost immediately after you release the space bar. Move to the place in the file where you want to begin recording, tab to the record button, hold the space bar down to compose your thoughts if you need to do it, then gently release it and immediately start talking. Or just about immediately. As I say, and I'm emphasizing this because this is the sort of program that it's difficult to demonstrate and it may seem far more daunting to use when you listen to this demonstration than it will if you experiment with it and play with it for a while. I really like this program and I hope you like it too. To conclude, I'm going to go through two or three items in the menus. As you recall, I said near the beginning of this demonstration that when you open Sound Recorder, you're placed in a dialogue. The dialogue is the main window of the program. Because you're in the main window, you have access to menus. A lot of the time, when you open a dialogue in a program, you're leaving the main window and going into a dialogue, so you don't have access to the program menus. In this case, the dialogue is the main program window, so you have access to the menus here. Sound Recorder doesn't have some of the shortcut keys that most programs have. So, if you want to save your work, you press Alt to open the file menu, down arrow to save, and then press Enter. If you've already saved the file before and given it a name, it will save the file with whatever changes you've made. If you haven't saved the file before, then down arrow to Save As and press Enter. You are now in a typical Save As dialog. Give the file a name and press Enter to save it. In other words, the Save and Save As dialogs work the same as they do in standard Windows programs, but you need to get to them through the menus. You can't use commands like Control S for save. You can use Alt FA for Save As. Those kind of commands work. But you don't have commands such as Control S for save or Control O for open that completely bypass the menus. Most Windows programs, of course, do have such commands, but this program doesn't. Let's say that you've finished recording. The slider is where you want to end the recording. You've stopped recording, and you're using the two-hour template, and you have all this unused time at the end of the file. You want to get rid of it. Of course, now it's perfectly fine to have your screen reader functioning. So, have your screen reader on, open the menus with Alt, right arrow once to edit, down arrow 7 times, you don't have to count, but it is 7 times, and you'll get to Delete After Current Position. This will delete everything after where you are in the file. Press Enter, a dialog comes up asking, are you sure? Answer yes, the way you do in all these kinds of dialogues, and all the extra unused part of the file is now gone. If you have some space at the beginning of the file that you want to get rid of, or some sort of extraneous material that you placed there or was accidentally placed there when you were beginning to record, before the actual material that you want begins, then you move to a place in the file immediately before the material begins that you want to be at the start of the file. You don't want to accidentally cut off any material, so you move to a point just a tiny bit before the material begins. Press Alt, right arrow to edit, down arrow 6 times this time to delete before current position. Press Enter. You'll be asked if you're sure and answer yes. So in the Edit menu, there are two items, one right below the other. The first one is delete before current position. The other one is delete after current position. One thing I need to caution you about, if there's only a little bit of space at the beginning of a file before the material you want starts to play, if you use delete before current position, it may cause problems. Something odd may happen. I've seldom had this happen, and I don't remember the exact details, but the player interface may disappear, or something odd may happen where you can't work with the player anymore. It's annoying if this happens, but save your work. Make sure everything is saved that you've done if you're going to try to delete material that occurs at the beginning of a file and there's very little space at the beginning of the file between the material you're deleting and where the material begins that you actually want to begin the file. Indeed, you should save as you work in general, and after you've finished working, before you delete after and before the current position, as you're trimming the end and the beginning of a file, if it needs trimming, save the file first. Indeed, as you're working on the file, you should regularly save what you've done. If you've added 2 or 3 minutes of material, then save the file. That's a good rough general rule of thumb, to save your material every 2 or 3 minutes, so that if something unexpected happens, you won't lose work, or you won't lose much. I'm going to very briefly discuss 2 items in a menu which is named Effects. If you use Alt to open the menus, and right or left arrow a number of times, you'll get to the Effects menu. As you move through this menu, the first item you'll see is Increase Volume by 25%. If you've made a recording and you're dissatisfied with the volume level and you want to raise it, then use the Increase by 25% option to raise it. If you want it even louder, then use the Increase by 25% option again. You can use it repeatedly to raise the volume. Every time you use it, the volume will go up. I believe there's some maximum beyond which you can't go, but this gives you pretty good control over the volume that the file is going to be. Below the Increase Volume item in the menu is a Decrease Volume item. If for some reason you record a file and it's too loud, you can decrease the volume. If you're working with a long file and you press Enter on either of these options, Increase or Decrease Volume, there will be a pause while the entire file's volume level is changed. The menu will close and you'll be placed back in the main window. You'll know when you're back in the main window because you'll hear an announcement of some sort that you're on a button or that you're on a track bar. Wherever you were before is where you will be placed. After you make a change using the Effects menu, let's say you raise the volume by 25%, once the volume has finished being changed, you can play a little of the file to see if it's as you want. Then you can go back into the Effects menu and make some other change if you want, like raise the volume more, or lower the volume, or do whatever you want to do. Then you can listen to a little bit of the file to see how it sounds. And don't forget that once the file is as you want it, after you've worked with the Effects menu, in order to make the change permanent, you have to save the file again. You may want to look through the menus and see the different items and experiment with them. There are other things you may want to play with. But I've quickly run down the most important items in the menus. And with that, I conclude this presentation. I hope you find it useful, and I hope you enjoy working with Sound Recorder. If you become skilled at using it, or skilled at using some other program that allows you to edit on the fly, you'll be able to produce podcasts that are not amateurishly unedited, but nice, tight productions. Of course, there are programs that allow you to edit after you finish working, but when you're creating a podcast, it's usually much faster and more convenient to edit as you work. My guess is that one reason that many podcasts are not edited or are very amateurishly edited is because people don't know that you can edit on the fly, or they don't know how. I hope this presentation allows you to be an exception. Okay, now I'm back. Let me just make sure the microphone is functioning. It is. Sorry about that little noise, but I had to check it. Now, I want to, at this time,
JAWS for
I just ran JAWS.
Windows M, desktop.
I want to, at this time,
my document.
Correct one minor error that I realized I made as I was listening to the presentation now. And I want to add one or two clarifying points. I'm going to
Audacity.
I'm going to check something now. You don't need to worry about what I'm doing, really, but I want to check something to give you correct information.
Enter. Audacity. Control-O. Select one or more on the Shift tab. Folder view list view. Not selected. Charlie. One of escape. Escape.
Oh, I see. I don't have to go through all that. I just realized it. Let me check this number.
Root JAWS to PC. Bottom of file. Project rate. 22,050 cursor. Zero.
All right. That's it.
Alt-F4. To select a button from the list. Press title list. Desk. Alt-Tab. Desktop training.
That's it. What I wanted to do was to tell you that I made an error. I was talking about a sample rate of 25,000. The sample rate that I meant to discuss that will give you 2 hours of recording is 2250. Now, after... let me check the notes I made. Yes. Another thing that I meant to mention, but that I didn't, is when I'm talking about 2 hours, I didn't specify that I had made a monaural file. The 44,000 sample rate file that I talked about, I specified as a stereo file, but the 2250 sample rate file I didn't specify as being a monaural file. If your podcast is purely spoken word, there's no reason to make a stereo podcast unless you're recording something where you want a stereo effect. So if you're just talking and explaining something or describing something, if you make a monaural file, you'll be able to get more room. You'll be able to get the 2 hours that I discussed. I haven't tested this, but I'm quite sure that if you make it a stereo file, you'll get less room. So use whatever matches what you want to do the best. Another point that I wanted to discuss, and I'm checking my notes here, one thing that's very useful to know about Sound Recorder, other recording programs let you do this in other ways, but let's say that you're using Sound Recorder and you want to demonstrate something. Well, you can have more than one copy of Sound Recorder running. You can open one and open a file. You can open another copy after that and open another file. When I do demonstrations, if there's something that I want you to hear, if I want you to hear the screen reader doing something, I record a file with the screen reader doing what I want to demonstrate. Then I have two versions of Sound Recorder opened, or rather two copies of Sound Recorder opened. The one where I'm recording my main program, I stop at the place where I want to put in the demonstration. Then I start recording. I Alt-Tab immediately to the version of Sound Recorder, the copy of Sound Recorder that has the demonstration, and I cause it to play. Because of my sound card settings for recording, this causes the material to be recorded onto the main file. I hope that's clear. If it's not, you may understand it as you experiment. There's one other point that I want to make sure is understood. When you're recording in Sound Recorder and you stop, you press the space bar and you stop recording, you're on the record button. If you're playing a file in Sound Recorder and you stop it by pressing the space bar, you're left on the play button. Sound Recorder leaves you on the button for the function that you were last using. So if you're playing a file and you stop it and then you want to start it playing again, all you need to do is press the space bar. And if you're recording and you want to continue recording, all you need to do is press the space bar. And one reason this is important to know is because when you're tabbing around through the various items, if you're moving somewhere, it will help you keep track of where you are. If you remember that if you stopped playing, you're on play, and you have to tab once to get to record, and then once again to get to the track bar. If you're recording and you stop, you only have to tab once to get to the track bar. If a file is actually playing and you want to move to the track bar, while it's playing, not after you've stopped the program, but while it's playing, all you have to do is tab once. You remember I told you that a dialog often doesn't show you items that are unavailable as you tab. Well, when you're playing, you can't play and record at the same time, so the record button is unavailable. Therefore, if you're playing a file and you tab once, you won't land on the record button. You will move immediately to the track bar. The same for shift tabbing. If you're working with the track bar and a file is playing, I should say the left-right slider, and a file is playing, to get back to the play button, you just shift tab once. Actually, it's the stop button if a file is playing. I'm sorry about that confusion. But if a file is playing and you shift tab once, you'll be on the stop button, and you can simply press the space bar at that point to stop the file. Now, as I said before, this sort of thing, this may seem like a sort of a daunting or a confusing program to work with, but I wouldn't give up on it. If you're interested in learning how to use it, I'd suggest really just doing some experimenting and playing around and trying different things, trying to use it. And you may well find, as I said, that it's far easier to understand as you work with it than it is from listening to my demonstration. My demonstration shows you how to do it. It gives you things to know and things to look for and understand as you're using the program. But really, probably the only way that it's really going to be clear to you and become clear and become easier to use the more you work with it is to practice with the program. Having said all that, I shall now conclude my presentation. I hope it will be useful to at least some of you. And now I shall return the microphone to whomever is going to be using it. So, for now, goodbye for the moment.
Menu 5.
Yeah, I think that was an excellent review of the program. I have a question. Are you sure, if you record something in stereo, that it cuts the recording time in half?
All right, thank you so very much, Kelly and Gene. We appreciate this amount of information that has been shared. And Fred, if you will now turn the unmute, if you will, or turn the text chat information, that part, back on. But we will begin by taking questions. And I'm going to and we ask that you please limit your question to one at a time. Don't ask several parts of a question. Just limit the question to one at a time. And when you've asked a question, please allow the speaker, whichever one of our presenters should answer it, to get the control key so that that question can be answered. So we'll start, and we appreciate your courtesy. And who would like to be first?
Well, see, this is Gary Wood. I kind of cut in by mistake. I was wondering, I was asking the gentleman, if you're recording in stereo, does it cut the recording time in half? Do you know that? Okay, let's see if Gene can. I guess that's for Gene. If you record in stereo, does it cut the recording in half?
As I understand it, I'm sorry, I wasn't right here. I was getting a little something to drink. As I understand it, if you use the same sample rate with a WAV file and you're recording in stereo, it cuts the time in half. I haven't tested it, but that's my expectation based on what I've observed. If you're using a lower bit rate and you can get 2 hours at the whatever that number was that I just checked, the 2550. If you get 2 hours in monaural recording, then I would expect that you would get 1 hour in stereo recording. I haven't listened to a lot of podcasts, but I doubt that most of them are or at least I doubt that a lot of them, I should say, are over a half hour in length. So if you want to make a stereo podcast with really good quality sound using the 44,000 sample rate, if you want it to be longer, you would record the first part, which would be a half an hour, then save the file. Then if you wanted to add more, you would record more. And then you'd use a recording program, not Sound Recorder, but you'd use some other recording program to put the files together. You may be able to do that by copying and pasting. There may be other ways of doing it, but as far as the other ways are concerned, I haven't played with enough recording programs enough to tell you the various ways. I know that in many of these programs you can either copy and paste or do the equivalent. It probably varies somewhat from program to program, just how you would do it or the terms they would use.
I was just going to comment that, I think you're by the 2550, whatever you were talking about there, Gene, I think you meant 22050 there for the sample rate. That's okay. I was just going to say, yeah, a lot of the podcasts I've heard are at least, they're probably over an hour long. I know there's been some that, have kind of overdone it, where they'll go up to at least, maybe 2 or 3 hours, but I think that's way too much. That's overkill as far as I'm concerned. Because a lot of people, I don't think really like to listen to long ones like that, at least from what I've gathered. They'd rather just listen to either, a short one or up to an hour, but that's pretty well the limit.
Okay, let me say very good, and Gene and Kelly deserve a drink of water before they start with the great job they did. If you who are text chatting have questions, hit F8, put a Q and enter, and Fred will call on you a bit later. First, we're going to give the microphone people a shot at this, and there we go. So give your name and ask the question, and then everybody, as Pat said, let the presenter answer you.
Yeah, that's correct. I meant 22,050, and I'm sorry about that. I tried to correct the error, and I got closer to the correct number, but I didn't get the right one. So the other thing I was going to say is I haven't heard many podcasts. It's not really an area that I've been particularly interested in, and my impression that they tend to be shorter is probably not correct. I've just happened to hear a few short ones. Aside from that, I guess I would say that my main interest in this is showing people how to use a program that's already on their machine to make a nice podcast. Probably not a really elaborate one, but a really nicely edited one. But as far as questions really relating to podcasts per se, I'm not a good person to ask about that.
Okay. Kelly and Gene, I would like to thank you for this wonderful presentation. I have one quick question, especially for Kelly. You mentioned some sites where you can download some music that can be useful for using it to insert at the beginning or end of the podcast. Are there other resources that you would like to recommend for checking out those music besides the one that you've shown us?
Well, let's see. Thanks for your comments there, Joseph. I'll give those sites again, so everyone knows. There's www.garageband.com. And I should point out that a lot of these sites, they also have, they've got a variety of music on there. So if you don't like, the upbeat stuff like that I was using, you don't have to worry about that. You can, find a variety of artists and whatnot, but anyway, garageband.com is one. Magnatune.com, that's magnatune.com, is another. Another one I checked out is podsafeaudio.com, that's podsafe and then audio.com, and this is not to be confused with the Podsafe Music Network, which is at music.podshow.com, I believe the site is. That one, just so everyone knows, is not very accessible. I've had a look at it. I've signed up for the PodSafe Music Network, and they need to do a lot of work, as far as I'm concerned, to get it working. I've heard some people have been able to get it to work with the System Access or the Freedom Box or whatever it's called now. But if you're using JAWS, it can be very tricky, and especially since when you're signing up, it won't be there on the first page, but if you're signing up for it, when you go to the next page, you're going to be presented with one of those CAPTCHA things, and there's no audio equivalent. So I think that one is out of luck as far as we're concerned, although there are a few blind composers on there, and I think that it would be great if they could, well, I don't know about if they, but if people could put a little pressure on those guys to make their content accessible, because they do have some good stuff. I've heard it on various podcasts, like the ones for CBC Radio and others. Those are a few of them. I'm sure there's other ones out there, but those are just off the top of my head as far as music ones go. You can also find some at creativecommons.org, I think it is. I know they've got a section up there with related to audio work, and as well sites that have Creative Commons music, like mine, for instance. I'm licensed under that. Those can be used, at least my work anyway, can be used in podcasts, provided that they're non-commercial and that you're not going to abuse them anyway, such as take them and use it against me or anything like that. That is definitely not legal as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, those are some of the sites I'm aware of.
Okay, and any of you, of course, can email these gentlemen. The contact info is in the release, and if you email them, you can add chat all you wish on that. That's a good question, though.
I've got a question. As I said near the beginning of my presentation, I haven't used enough recording programs to know if others or which others let you edit on the fly. I'm curious if people know of other programs that do. There are so many recording programs that I haven't been interested enough in them to look at a lot of them, but the one or two that I've looked at don't appear to allow you to do it. But for those who want to do more sophisticated work, may be interested in learning about other programs that allow you to edit on the fly, or that allow you to copy and paste so easily that editing on the fly may not be an advantage. All I can say is that I find it to be a really good advantage with the programs that I use for recording. That doesn't mean that there aren't recordings where you can cut and paste or copy and paste material to make it much easier than what I've experienced when I haven't worked with recording on the fly, editing on the fly.
So does anyone know of any other, of course, I think of Goldwave or SoundForge, obviously, I would think that. Yeah, I miss a lot of the Kellys, and I apologize for that. Had a family thing had to take care of. But anybody else think of any programs that allow you to edit on the fly?
There are a few programs out there on the internet. I just sent a text message, including Goldwave, Total Recorder, and Audacity. Goldwave so far is most accessible, and there's some JavaScript for it. And Rick Harmon from Blind Code Tech has done an excellent review / tutorial about Goldwave.
Okay, well, I just want to be clear about this. I've played with Goldwave, but I haven't played with it extensively. I couldn't figure out a way to edit on the fly. In other words, to go back the way I did using a sound recorder and record over something and have the material erased while I recorded over it and new material put in its place. Are you saying that there's a way to do that with Goldwave, or does that require copying and pasting, or cutting and pasting, however you want to do it?
I was just going to say I don't know about Goldwave if that'll do that, and I don't think SoundForge will let you do that either. But if anyone has used the Studio Recorder program from APH, I wonder if that would be one that would let you do that. I mean, I don't know anything about that program. I've never tested it or anything like that. In that way.
GoldWave will allow you to cut and paste, and you can even block out a section and do a cut and replace. So, but if you try to record over something, once you start recording a second time on the same file, it starts recording at the very beginning and overwrites the entire file.
It's Pat Seed, and I have a question. As you know, you can record with this client, and what you get is MP3 files. Now, I'm wondering if, and I guess this question is for Gene, if there's any way to, because you said you had to use WAV files with the Microsoft editor, the sound recorder, is there any way to convert the MP3 file that, or bits of files that you can record with this client to WAV files and bring them into Sound Recorder and put them together or edit them there?
Well, in general, programs that record allow you to open a file and then convert the file to another format. You may want to use Sound Recorder to put files together, but because of the limitations on file size in Sound Recorder, it may not work well. In general, recording programs will let you put two files together. Let's say, and different programs may do this differently. I've done this with Audacity, but I haven't really done much experimenting with other programs in this respect. In Audacity, one way you can do it is to open one file and then you open another file. You then have two windows opened, each with its own file in Audacity. And you can alt tab between the windows. You can select an entire file and copy it to the clipboard, then you can move to the other window and move the cursor to the end or the beginning or wherever you want within a file and paste the other file in. You can't do precise editing in the version of Audacity that I use. You may be able to in the newer beta version. I haven't played with that. But the answer, what I'm generally saying is that that any good recording program will let you convert files from one format to another, and any good recording program will let you in some way connect files to make a whole long file. To really know how to do it with the specific program you're using, you'd have to know about that one specific program.
Kelly, this is Stuart in Missouri. You had given a website address for automatic script concept.com that you could buy for about $15. I was wondering if you could give that website again.
Sure, it's www.anoticconcepts.com. That's anoticconcepts.com, and if you want, I can put that in the chat window. I should advise people though that this script is, I believe, a PHP script, if I remember correctly. So your website will need to be PHP compatible. In other words, it'll be able to use PHP material. If you're using a site like, let's say, GeoCities or something to host your website, I don't think it's going to work for you on there. But if you've got something like, with your own, if you've got something that is PHP compatible, then it'll definitely work for you.
I just want to add one or two things that I didn't think of before quickly. One is that there are programs that let you edit MP3 files directly without you having to change, convert the MP3 file into another format. I haven't worked with them, and I don't know enough to comment further on them, but it may be that, you could connect two MP3 files in that way without having to do any conversion. You can, you may well be able to edit the files as MP3 files and then join them. One way to find out more about this sort of thing is to join a list like Blind Tech and ask there, or there's a blind audio list. I don't have the address to subscribe to that, but for these kind of questions where I know that something exists and you may be able to use it, but I don't have enough knowledge to comment further, lists like that are good ways to pursue these kinds of questions.
The only reason I asked about this program is because people already know how to record with this client, so with this Talking Communities client. So therefore, they are used to it. They can pause. They can do that kind of thing. But it is going to come out as an MP3 file, and they would have to convert it. So that's the only reason I asked about that. I don't think that you can put anything together using the Talking Communities client bringing MP3 files together. I'm not sure, but I don't think you can.
Well, no, you can't do it with this client, but there are programs. I don't remember if they're called maybe something like MP3 Direct Cut or MP3 Cut or something. There are programs where you can do that with MP3 files. However, this program really isn't meant for recording high-quality audio or doing podcasts or that sort of thing. The bitrate that's used isn't nearly high enough. I mean, I guess bitrate would be the proper term when we're talking about MP3 files. You're not going to get really good quality audio, and in addition to that, you could do it. You could record something. You'd have to be in some sort of room, like a practice room or something, where you could set it to record. You'd have to have the client running, and you know, maybe go into the practice room or something on a site like this. But that's really not a good way to do things like podcasts where you want good quality audio.
Okay, Fred, I don't see any cues up there, but I may have missed them. If you guys who are text chatting want to ask questions, be sure to do an F8, put a cue. And Fred will recognize you. Fred, are there any text chat questions up there?
Not at this point in time. All that's up there are informationals that Joseph Lee and you have put up there. That's it so far.
Okay, any more questions?
Hello, my name is Melissa. Can anybody hear me?
Yes, Melissa, you're coming through loud and clear.
Okay, I just had, first of all, a comment. I have used Studio Recorder. It's a very good program for recording spoken word material, and it does do like mixing and stuff like that. What I like about it is, because I had used it on a friend's computer once, and what I like about it is that you can treat it as if it was a word processing document, and that's what I really like about it. You can treat it as, you know, going up and down, like if you're going up and down in lines in your document, going up using the up and down arrow keys or something like that. And two, I like it when you just hit the escape key and it stops your recording. It's a very great program to use. But I did have a question, and that is, how do you label graphics?
Who wants to tackle that one, either one of you or any member of the audience? But let's give our presenters a shot at it first.
To label a graphic, you'll need to use what's called Graphics Labeler. A Graphics Labeler program allows you to label graphics. What you need to do on your PC and your Pacmate, if you have it, you need to activate JAWS cursor, minus key, or caps lock plus P, if I'm correct, on a BX is .8J. Then you need to go to Graphic, and then press Insert G to label the graphic. And you can label it like Record button, just like Gene has done, Play button, and so forth. Usually, as part of scripts, it includes what's called JGF files, which are JAWS graphics file, which has descriptions for graphics that are used in particular programs such as Windows Sound Recorder and other programs that we've discussed today.
Well, I do business with a bank here in Lansing, Gary Wood from Michigan. I had no way at first to be able to check my statements and everything because it had all these, it just had graphics and all that stuff, but it seems like with JAWS I can find some way to label them so I can have some idea what I can read in there, you know, what I got by labeling the graphics. Then, I mean, that's what is meant by that, I think.
Melissa, thank you, Gary and Joseph. Melissa, does that answer your question?
Yeah, sort of. I've never used a graphic labeler. But see, if you go into this graphic labeler, do you have to call the label yourself, or does it, like, say if you're going to label it play button, you'd have to write play, or, you know, I've never done it before, and actually this is my first time coming to this site. In fact, a friend had told me about it a few days ago, so I'm very new to this place, but I just want to know, because Gene had mentioned he labeled the graphics, and I just thought, you know, how on earth do you do that? So do you have to put, like, for example, the play button on the sound recorder? Do you have to write play when you do insert G for the sound or the graphic labeler, or how does that work? How does that work?
Well, as far as labeling graphics is concerned, I don't know if there's enough interest to do a short presentation on it, to have somebody do it, me or somebody, for one of the meetings, for one of the gatherings that we have. The procedure is similar, but it's a little different depending on whether you're using JAWS or WindowEyes. I don't know anything about HAL, so I can't comment on that. The essence of it is, there's more than one way to label graphics. There are some graphics you can label using what would be called an auto graphics labeler, but that can only label some graphics. It can automatically label certain graphics in some programs. As far as manually labeling graphics goes, if you're using JAWS, if you can get to the graphic, and if you know what it does, well, you can either move there with the JAWS cursor, or, in the case of Sound Recorder, let's say that you open Sound Recorder and you don't have any file, you haven't loaded any file, and you haven't recorded anything. The button you're on is the record button. You're actually on that button, and you're in the dialogue. Since you're on the button in the dialogue, and since you have access to it, moving around using keyboard commands and getting to it as a window structure, you route the JAWS cursor to the button. Then you do insert G. You type the name that you want to give the graphic, like play, like in this case it would be record because that's the only button available when you first open Sound Recorder, and then you press enter, and then the graphic is labeled. In WindowEyes, the procedure is similar, but it's not identical, and I don't know whether, you know, it's appropriate to go into that now. If there's interest or enough interest, I will. But let's say, for example, what I was discussing during the beginning of the presentation. The record button is the only button available when you open Sound Recorder. So you can label that. You can route the JAWS cursor to that button and then label it. Now, when you press the space bar and start recording, you're automatically moved to the stop button in the dialog. Therefore, you can route the JAWS cursor again to that button while you're recording and while you've been moved to the play button. I mean, not the play button, the stop button. So you route the JAWS cursor to that button. Again, you do insert G and type the word stop and press enter. Now you have two graphics labeled. And I could go on with this a bit. I wasn't sure whether it was appropriate to go into all this detail in my presentation. I was debating going into labeling graphics, but I thought that might make the presentation too long and convoluted. excuse me. If you that may give you a better idea of what to do.
And the other thing you can do, too, is you can use an auto graphics label. That's what I tend to do. And some graphics do have little text things underneath them. Like, I don't know about sound recorder, but I think it may have something like maybe the record or play or something like that. If it does, then JAWS can go and label those for you. You would just hold down the Control, Insert, and G, and that will start the auto graphics labeler, and then you won't have to do anything. It will take care of that. But there are some that you may need to do by hand, so in that case, just use Insert G, and then it'll bring up a dialog, and it's pretty simple to do. But that's in essence how it works.
Well, in Sound Recorder, there are no graphics that can be auto-labeled. Actually, it's not a question of whether there's text around the graphic. There are graphics that when you move a mouse to the graphic, some text appears on the screen explaining what the graphic is, or giving some sort of description of the graphic. That's called a tooltip. In order for the auto graphics labeler to work, the graphic has to have a tooltip, and the auto graphic labeler can detect the tooltip and label the graphic using that tooltip. So if you were in a program and if you moved your mouse to a graphic, and if you had your program set up, if you had your screen reader set up so that it would read the tooltip, it would say the same thing as if you auto-labeled the graphic. Many graphics can be auto-labeled that way because many graphics do have tooltips, but then there are times when graphics don't have tooltips.
Okay, that's good to know. Charlie Richthart has a question, but first I'd like to ask one brief one. Are these labels, will they be there the next time you run the program, or do you lose them when you exit it?
Let's give our speakers a chance to respond here. I think they're trying. We didn't hear you, if you did.
I was just going to say, no, you won't lose the graphics after you get out of the program, because they're automatically saved.
In JAWS, that's true. The graphics are automatically saved. In WindowEyes, while the program is still opened, you would go to the WindowEyes window, and you would open the menus, find a save and press enter, and then I don't recall if you would use the save set file item in the menus, save set files, or if you'd use the save set files and all dictionaries. I'm not sure about that, and so since I'm not sure if this is something that WindowEyes users are going to play with. And if you know you haven't made any other changes in any dictionaries, then you can experiment. But I know that if you use the save set file as save set files and all dictionaries, that it will save it.
Okay, Fred, I think there was another question from Charlie, wasn't it, up there? Thank you, guys, on that one.
That's correct. He's put a queue up. If he wants to put his question up, I'll read it. Or if he wants to speak it, I know he has a microphone.
Yeah, I'll just speak it if it's okay, gentlemen. You guys may have covered this already. I'm not sure because I was kicked out of the room for some reason. I sort of dropped out and I had to get back in. But from where can I get SoundForge, and what kind of cost is involved in that?
SoundForge can be obtained at, and I believe this is the right site, I can't remember the exact website, but it's for Sony Media Pictures, and I used to know it. It's something about sonymedia.com or something like that. Anyway, I'll look real quick and then I'll give you the address, but there is a bit of a cost. If you get the studio version, I believe it is around $50, and you can, download that or whatever. And the full version, which is what I use, is, for starters, I believe around about $400. But I believe can upgrade from the studio to the full version at a reduced price. I got The one I'm using now, I got it for around, I think it was $199, but that was on a special, so you have to sometimes check. Go ahead.
Well, try to look that up, Kelly, if you can, because I started it and then messed it up. But if you can, Charlie, I think, can check it out. Here, let's see if there's any more questions.
Well, while we're checking, Rosanna Hostetler has no question. Just wanted to let all know I'm at Guide Dogs for the Blind and have a black lab named Narnia. She is sweet.
Well, congratulations, Rosanna Rose. And I got my first two dogs at Guide Dogs, but moving on, so I'm very familiar with the school.
Well, I was trying to do some of the things that he was telling about with the insert G, insert control G, and then I guess I was automatically labeling them, but then I got out for a minute. And for some reason, I can't get back in here. If I get out sometimes, I got to reboot to get back in here, it seems like that.
Okay, try this site. I think it's www.sonymediasoftware.com. That's SONYMEDIA and then software.com. It says home of Vegas, SoundForge, and some other programs, so I think this might be the right place.
Okay, thank you, Kelly. Do appreciate it. And just a comment here. I, too, had to reboot to get back into the room, so I had the same experience.
I can't hear you.
He said he had to reboot to get in the room. It's a work in progress. We're getting better and better with each update, and I'm sorry about that.
How could he not be in the room and we could hear him?
Well, I was trying something for a minute, and then I just thought I'd get out of that window, and then it took me out, and then I just and I tried to get back in, and just, you know, the same way I do it, but sometimes I just had to reboot. It's probably no big problem. It's just something that I did, you know, just it's not a complaint or anything. I just thought I'd give that information in case anybody had that problem.
Okay, any more questions?
Hey, it's Melissa again. That GarageBand website, GarageBand.com, I know what I was going to ask. If you're going to be playing music on your podcast, do you have to have a license? Because I do just recording stuff on my own. You know, just because I get bored a lot. I record a lot of things, but do you have to have a license if you're going to publish your podcast?
Not necessarily, no. You don't have to have a license. But I think the best thing to do as far as that is concerned, if you can, is to use Creative Commons licensed music. And that way, and with that, you know, when you see the Creative Commons symbol on a website, like at the bottom of mine, at caseofperjury.net, it will show you what you can and cannot do with the work, is basically the idea. But for the most part, I think you're okay. As long as you're not selling the podcast or trying to make money off of it, then you're doing fine. But if you were, then I'd be a bit worried about that. But for the most part, you're okay with Creative Commons stuff anyway. There's also a website that I've got bookmarked here, and I can get the address for that one. It's called the Podcasting Legal Guide. And it's one of these wiki sites, and it provides a lot of information on what you can do and what you can't, usually what you can and what you can't do as far as podcasts are concerned. And there's a number of different resources on there for things like podcast music and stuff like that, and what all is involved with that.
Well, I just want to mention, somebody else may want to comment in more detail about this, in case there are people who don't know what a Creative Commons license is. I know generally about what it is. I'm no expert in that area. But a Creative Commons license isn't something that you need or something that you have yourself, unless you have material that you've licensed under it. But it's a form of licensing the people, some people who create material use, that gives other people the right to use that material in certain ways. It's called commons because anyone can use the material as long as they do it in accordance with the terms of the license agreement. So, in case anybody's confused about that, a Creative Commons license isn't something you need or you have. It's the terms under which people who create material, such as literature or music, can make them available for general use with certain restrictions placed on it.
I'm having a bit of a problem here. I'm trying to copy the address for the podcast legal guide in here on the chat window, and so far it's not it's not pasting in the address. So I don't know what's going on here.
Let's see if Fred can talk to you for a second here, Kelly, on that.
Well, what method are you using to try and paste it? I've had problems with a lot of websites lately copying and pasting their location. The best place to get it is from the address bar in the browser. Make sure it's selected and use Control-C, and then you should be able to paste it with no problem. Although Control is your microphone talk key as well, and that may be creating the problem for you.
Well, the right control key on my keyboard is the talk key, but I'm using the left control key to do that. And as far as I know, I have it selected. But when I press Control-C, well, I don't hear anything from JAWS, but that doesn't surprise me, because it sometimes stops doing that, even though stuff does get copied. But it just won't let me paste it into the text chat window. Let me see if I can get it in WordPad and see if that works.
While there's a free space, I hope, Kelly, I just wanted to add a couple things. This is Pam in California. The PC audio list is a free list, and I believe the format for that is PC-audio. It is PC-audio. Subscribe at freelists.org. And the PC Direct Cut is what, Gene, you're correct, that's what people have been talking about. And finally, Kelly, I believe that address for SoundForge is correct.
Good, thanks, Pam.
This is Ken in Rochester. I've got to take off here pretty quick. Gene and Kelly, you gentlemen, you did a very nice job. Thank you for doing that. Robert, I'll be in touch with you. I'll drop you an email tomorrow about the upcoming event that we talked about. So I'll take care and good night.
Yeah, I think it's up there now. I had to type it in unless I'm in the wrong window, but I think it's up there.
I found the website. I just searched on the Google on my browser. The address is wiki. If I'm correct, this is called Podcasting Legal Guide. The address is wiki, W-I-K-I, dot creative commons commons .org/podcasting_legal_guide.
Yeah, you got it. And it did get put in the window. I guess it did work.
Yeah, thank you, Joseph. He did get it in the window because I read it here. And thank you, though. A lot of great talent here. Everybody's sharing. I think it's wonderful.
I think that the presentations were both excellent. It seemed like we have two professionals in here tonight.
Unfortunately, unpaid professionals. They're doing it because they care, and we sure appreciate it. Any more questions?
There's nothing new in TechChat.
Well, gentlemen, we want to thank you again for doing such outstanding jobs. You guys really prepare. It's professionally done. It will be archived on the website, accessibleworld.org, right here. Under Tech Talk, look for the archives, and it'll be up here. And I know, from a personal point of view, the number of letters or comments from people, you meet them, and they say, just keep Tech Talk going. We may not comment there, but we listen, and we greatly appreciate it. So thank you, guys, very, very much. And I know Pat wants to finalize that, and then I'm sure you guys can keep talking. Next week, we have the Rockbox, Glenn Irvin, will tell you how to make iPods accessible, more accessible. So let's see if Pat wants to say anything here.
Yes, I do. Thank you so very much. It has been very enlightening. Excuse me. Enlightening, and it certainly has been very meaningful. Very, very good descriptions from both of you, and the archives certainly will get a lot of hits. You can be sure of that. Thank you again.